Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, January 29th, 2026. There's a photo on the front page of the News Gazette with the headline Revving It Up and the caption Orange Crush member Carter Wood prepares to activate the siren at the start of Wednesday's second half between the Illini women and number 2 UCLA. But it wasn't enough to buoy Illinois through to the end, leaving them at 5-5 in the Big Ten so far this season. Teen victims testify as shooting trial opens. Georgia man accused in June 2025 incident. Two teenagers who were struck by gunfire in an incident last summer testified Wednesday at the alleged shooter's trial. Kiwan Jenkins, 27, of Lawrenceville, Georgia, has been charged with attempted murder and two counts of aggravated battery with a firearm for his alleged role in a June 8, 2025 incident at the Oakwood Trace apartment complex. A 15-year-old was struck in the hand, while a 13-year-old was struck in the head. Both survived. On the stand, the older teen said he wasn't sure who shot him out of the several people in the parking lot that night. The younger teen remembered the moment he was using his mother's phone and found photos of a man he believed to be the attacker. He said he just shook his head because it's crazy that he shot a kid, the 13-year-old said, down bad. The 13-year-old was left with physical disabilities because of the wound to his head and just recently underwent another surgery related to his condition. Attorneys on the case asked both boys about events that started at Douglas Park during a Champaign Urbana Days event. The two victims said a fight of some kind broke out, and the older one said he got involved only in trying to help break it up. Later, the boys went back to Oakwood Trace Apartments, where at least one more fight broke out. It seemed to play out in relation to the events at Douglas Park. The two boys were outside with the older encouraging the younger to go inside one of the buildings and avoid more of the fighting. According to their testimonies, three adult men and some girls were walking across the parking lot when one opened fire. The younger boy remembered seeing a man in dark clothing pass a firearm to a man in light clothing, who was the one to fire the weapon. The older boy said he didn't get a good look at any of them. Police were called to Oakwood Trace for a report of shooting around 10:18 p.m. June 8, 2025. Body camera footage from one of the first officers to arrive on scene had audible screaming and yelling from other people around the apartment complex. Some immediately told the officer a boy had been shot in the head, and the officer went to assist. After the boys were transferred to a hospital, the investigation continued, and police were directed to a building where witnesses said the shooter had fled. Inside, they found Jenkins laying on the floor in a room with several small children, appearing to be asleep with one of them laying on his chest. A detective described the children as seeming frightened when he opened the door. Jenkins was searched and questioned, and the house was searched as well, but no firearm was found, and the clothing the shooter was reportedly wearing was not present. In her opening argument, State's Attorney Julia Reitz said surveillance footage would reflect the victim's statement about a man in light clothing receiving a firearm from another man before firing it. In her opening statement, public defender Elizabeth Pollock said that Jenkins was only present at the apartments for a cookout at which essentially everyone was related to one family and more connected to the victims than he is. Representative Budzinski pushes slate of campaign finance and ethics reforms. U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat Springfield, visited the University of Illinois campus Wednesday to discuss her support for various ethical and campaign finance reforms for government officials. This includes overturning the landmark Citizens United versus FEC Supreme Court case, which she said allows wealthy corporations and billionaires to spend unlimited sums of money to influence our election. It amplifies their voice while drowning out everyone else's, and that's what's so deeply wrong about it, she told university students. Budzinski and End Citizens United President Tiffany Mueller discussed these priorities in a conversation at the Illini Union, moderated by Brian Gates, the Honorable W. Russell Arrington Professor in State Politics for the U of I System and a professor in the Department of Political Science at the Urbana-Champaign campus. The Congresswoman announced that she is supporting a variety of proposals for reform, including the Citizens Over Corporations Amendment, which would amend the U.S. Constitution to overturn the Citizens United decision, the Presidential Accountability Amendment, which would amend the U.S. Constitution so that the President and other top officials do not have immunity from criminal prosecution, legislation which Brzezinski is working to draft, which would ban members of Congress and government officials from trading on political outcomes on prediction markets, the Restore Trust in Congress Act, which would ban members of Congress as well as their spouses, dependent children, and trustees from owning, buying, and selling individual stocks, securities, commodities, or futures, the High Court Gift Ban Act, which would ban Supreme Court justices from receiving gifts worth more than $50 in a single instance or $100 over the course of a year, which would align with the standards that members of Congress must follow, the SCOTUS Ethics Recusal and Transparency Act, which would require Supreme Court justices to adopt and follow a binding enforceable code of ethics, the Disclose Act, which would require organizations that spend money in elections, including super PACs and dark money groups, to disclose the names of donors who have given $10,000 or more during an election cycle. Brzezinski said that she has worked with Mueller and the team at End Citizens United, a political action committee that advocates for campaign finance reform, to form her anti-corruption agenda. She added that she wants to have these priorities ready to go with the expectation that Democrats will regain a House majority in November. She also noted that many of the proposals are a collection of great work done by House colleagues of mine. So much of this is about restoring faith and trust, making public officials accountable to the people again, Mueller said. I think throughout our history there has been a push and pull between those with consecrated long power and the people who's going to have power and who's going to have a voice in our democracy. I think that's where we are at again, but it doesn't happen on its own. It happens because we all join together and demand that it happens. In discussing the issue of prediction markets, Brzezinski said that platforms such as Polymarket, Kalshi, and FanDuel enable individuals to bet on matters such as how long press conferences will run and whether the U.S. will strike Iran. Prediction markets are now predicting everything, including will the president of Venezuela be taken, captured, and removed? Gaines said, somebody made a huge amount of money on that. Members of Congress who have inside information that the general public does not should not be allowed to bet on such matters, Brzezinski said. Insider information is also why she supports a ban on congressional stock trading. I myself don't own stock, she said. I think that is part of being transparent. I think you've got to practice what you preach. Dylan Blaha, who is challenging Brzezinski in the Democratic primary, expressed some skepticism over the anti-corruption agenda that she announced Wednesday. I'm glad Nikki signed on, he told the News Gazette. I support overturning Citizens United and ending corruption in our government. However, it's easy to sign on to this bill now when we know Republicans and President Donald Trump won't sign it into law. He was also critical of how Brzezinski has received contributions from billionaires, lobbyists, and groups such as the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Will she continue this approach in the future, or is this all because early voting for the Illinois primary begins on February 5th, he said. When asked for a response, Brzezinski said that she is grounded in the work that I did in the labor movement and working on issues that support working people here in the district. I report to the working people that elect me, not corporations, she said. As heard on News Gazette Radio, when ESPN backed bracketologist Joe Lunardi bumped into Brad Underwood at a Coaches vs. Cancer golf event over the summer, the head Illini was just concerned about getting all of the guys into the country. He said, if they all get here, we're going to be good, Lunardi recalled Wednesday on News Gazette Radio. And they did, and they are. So good, in fact, that the winners of nine straight made the biggest jump on Lunardi's nightly 1-68 rating and now sit as the number 2 seed in the East region in his latest bracket, projected to open against Navy in St. Louis. The last part's significant, Lunardi stressed. I think it's more about the path than the actual numbers in front of your name. If the choice is a seed in San Diego, is a one in San Diego, one seed in San Diego or a 2 in St. Louis, give me Burger B as an Illinois fan. Before Saturday's win at Purdue, Illinois had flown under the radar a little bit, Lunardi said. That's about to change. Some of that's the way they play. They shoot over half their shots from three. People like to watch that. I like to watch that. It's kind of must-see TV right now. If not for automated license plate readers, Champaign County Sheriff Dustin Huerman said deputies would have had to search parking lot by parking lot for the getaway driver car driven by the suspect in November robbery of Sydney's Longview Bank. Instead, with an assist from Champaign Police, an arrest was made following a short pursuit within a matter of hours. There are awesome resources, Huerman said, of the flock safety cameras, which allow us to locate that vehicle in West Champaign and get the person in custody. An August audit by the state found that Flock had allowed U.S. Customs and Border Protection to access some Illinois cameras and surveil drivers in violation of the state's Trust Act. Huerman called the announcement an eye-opener, which led area law enforcement administrators to double-check our policies, which we did, and it seems they're pretty solid. There's no evidence that our local data was accessed by immigration, Huerman added. Where were you 28 years ago Wednesday when President Bill Clinton's ride got stuck in the mud while it taxied out of Willard Airport? Head to the podcast section of thenewsgazette.com to hear then Willard marketing head John Rector, Air Force One story. Teacher of the Week, Robin Glass, reading interventionist, Carrie Busey Elementary School. Robin Glass has spent the last 16 years of her 22-year teaching career in the Unit 4. A decade ago, she switched roles from classroom teacher to Booker T. Washington STEM Academy to reading interventionist at Carrie Busey Elementary School, where she works today. I find my work to be important because, on a daily basis, I get to teach and model for students what resilience, hard work, and problem solving looks like. It is important for my students to know that the way they make it the finish line may look different than others, but with hard work, perseverance, and belief in themselves, they too will be victorious. I became a teacher for several reasons. First, I have a plethora of educators in my family. So education was definitely a topic discussed at family gatherings. Second, I've always believed that if you want better communities, you have to be intentional about encouraging, inspiring, and educating people at an early age. Lastly, I teach because I understand the significance of my presence in a school building. Many children believe what they can do when they see someone that looks like them doing what they desire to do. I keep my students engaged by singing, chanting, and dancing a lot. I implement a lot of games, and I am intentional about connecting their learning to their experiences in and out of the school building. Some of the most fulfilling moments are when my weekly and some daily check-ins with specific students and my weekly lunch dates with fifth graders. My favorite lessons are those where I incorporate Minutes to Win It games, reading and writing version. I love seeing the students work as a team and problem solve while trying to complete various tasks swiftly. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a flight attendant, an in-home daycare provider, or I would be an owner of a pre-K facility. Two of my favorite teachers were Mrs. Margaret Holland, my fourth and fifth grade math teachers at Goodman Pickens Elementary School in Goodman, Mississippi, and the late Dr. Shirley Reeves, college professor at Alcorn State University. Something else I am passionate about is educating and ministering to young people about self-worth and making healthy choices in every facet of life. DHS reforms or bust. Senate Dems set stage for another partial federal shutdown if ICE agents aren't forced to unmask and fix conduct. With a partial government shutdown looming, Senate Democrats laid out a list of demands Wednesday for the Department of Homeland Security, including an enforceable code of conduct for federal agents conducting immigration arrests and a requirement that officers show identification as the country reels from the deaths of two protesters at the hands of federal agents in Minneapolis. It remained unclear if President Donald Trump and Republicans would be willing to meet those demands, even as funding for Homeland Security and a swath of other government agencies was at risk of expiring Saturday. Irate Democrats have pledged to block a spending bill unless their demands for reforms are met. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer said Wednesday that the legislation won't pass until U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is reined in and overhauled. The Americans' people support law enforcement. They support border security. They do not support ICE terrorizing our streets and killing American citizens, Schumer said. With an uncertain path ahead, the standoff threatened to plunge the country into another shutdown just 2 months after Democrats blocked a spending bill over expiring federal health care subsidies, a dispute that closed the government for 43 days as Republicans refused to negotiate. That shutdown ended when a small group of moderate Democrats broke away to strike a deal with Republicans, but Democrats are more united this time after the fatal shootings of Alex Preddy and Renee Good by federal agents. There's a lot of unanimity and shared purpose within the Democratic caucus, Minnesota Senator Tina Smith said after a lunch meeting Wednesday. Boil it all down, what we are talking about is that these lawless ICE agents should be following the same rules that your local police department does. There has to be some accountability. Democrats lay out their demands. As the administration's aggressive immigration enforcement surge goes on, Schumer said Democrats are asking the White House to end roving patrols in cities and coordinate with local law enforcement on immigration arrests, including requiring tartar rules for warrants. Democrats also want an enforceable code of conduct so agents are held accountable when they violate rules, Schumer said. Agents should be required to have masks off, body cameras on, and carry proper identification, as in common practice in most law enforcement agencies. The Democratic caucus is united in those common sense reforms, and the burden is on Republicans to accept them, Schumer said. He has asked Republicans to separate out the Homeland Security bill from the others to avoid a broader shutdown. Senate Majority Leader John Tooney, Republican South Dakota, has said he was waiting for Democrats to outline what they want and suggested that they need to be negotiating with the White House. He indicated that he might be open to some of their demands, but encouraged Democrats and the White House to talk and find agreement. Many obstacles to a deal. It was unclear whether Trump would weigh in or how seriously the White House was engaged, or whether the two sides could agree on anything that would satisfy Democrats. The White House had invited some Democrats for a discussion to better understand their positions and avoid a possible government shutdown, a senior White House official said. But the meeting did not happen. The official requested anonymity to discuss the private invitation. With no serious negotiations underway, a partial shutdown appeared increasingly likely starting Saturday. The House passed the six remaining funding bills last week and sent them to the Senate as a package, and that makes it difficult to strip out the Homeland Security portion, as Democrats are demanding. Republicans could break the package apart with the consent of all 100 senators, which would be complicated, or through a series of votes that would extend past the Friday deadline. Even if the Senate could resolve the issue, House Republicans have made clear they do not want any changes to the bill they have passed. In a letter to Trump on Tuesday, the conservative House Freedom Caucus wrote that its members stand with the president and ICE. The package will not come back through the House without funding for the Department of Homeland Security, the letter said. Change in tone not reflected on street. President Donald Trump seemed to signal a willingness to ease tensions in Minneapolis after a second deadly shooting by federal immigration agents. But there was little evidence Wednesday of any significant changes following weeks of harsh rhetoric and clashes with protesters. The strain was evident when Trump made a leadership change by sending his top border advisors to Minnesota to take charge of the immigration crackdown. That was followed by seemingly conciliatory remarks about the Democratic governor and mayor. Trump said he and Governor Tim Walz, whom he criticized for weeks, were on a similar wavelength following a phone call. After a conversation with Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, the president praised the discussion and declared that lots of progress is being made. But on city streets, there were few signs of a shift. Immigration enforcement operations and confrontations with activists continued Wednesday in Minneapolis and St. Paul. A group of protesters blew whistles and pointed out federal officers in a vehicle on a North Minneapolis street. When the officers' vehicle moved, a small convoy of activists followed in their cars for a few blocks until the officers stopped again. When Associated Press journalists got out of their cars to document the encounter, officers with the Federal Bureau of Prisons pushed one of them, threatened them with arrest, and told them to get back in their car, despite the reporters identifying themselves as journalists. Officers from multiple federal agencies have been involved in the enforcement operations. From their car, the AP journalists saw at least one person being pepper sprayed and one detained, though it was unclear if that person was the target of operation or a protester. Suspect ID'd and attacked on Minnesota Democratic Representative Omar. No charges yet, substance he sprayed still to be identified. U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar, Democrat, Minnesota, blamed President Donald Trump for threats to her safety Wednesday, one day after she was accosted and squirted with liquid at an event in Minneapolis. The man arrested in Tuesday's attack has posted online in support of the Republican president. Every time the president of the United States has chosen to use hateful rhetoric to talk about me and the community that I represent, my death threats skyrocket, Omar said during a press conference. Asked if she was nervous about appearing in public, she said, "Fear and intimidation doesn't work on me." The attack came during a perilous political moment in Minneapolis, where two people have been fatally shot by federal agents during the White House's aggressive immigration crackdown. Omar, a refugee from Somalia, has long been a fixture of Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric. After she was elected 7 years ago, Trump said she should go back to her country. He recently described her as garbage and said she would be investigated. During a speech Tuesday in Iowa, shortly before Omar was attacked, he said immigrants need to be proud of the United States, not like Ilhan Omar. It's hard not to see the link between what happened and the attacks Trump has made against Omar personally, not to mention his siege of her city, said Jeremy Slevin, who worked for years as a spokesperson for Omar before becoming a senior advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders, independent Vermont. The White House declined to comment. Trump baselessly accused Omar of staging the attack. She probably had herself sprayed, knowing her, he told ABC News. The attack on Omar was a reminder of the country's threatening political climate, which has led some lawmakers to limit public events or not seek re-election. Representative Pramila Jayapal, Democrat, Washington, said she knows how Omar was feeling because an armed man showed up at her Seattle home in 2022, threatening her and her husband. It has to stop. I mean, we are just trying to do our jobs, and it could be quieted and could be called out by Trump and leaders in elected office who refuse to go along with it, but they continue to do it, and this is the consequence, Jayapal told the Associated Press. The man accused of squirting the substance on Omar has a criminal history and has made online posts supportive of the Republican president. Anthony Kaczmarek, 55, was convicted of felony auto theft in 1989, has been arrested multiple times on charges of driving under the influence, has had numerous traffic citations. Minnesota court records show there are also indications he has significant financial problems, including two bankruptcy filings. Police say Kaczmarek used a syringe to squirt liquid on Omar during Tuesday's event after she called for the abolishment of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the firing for or impeachment of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem following the fatal shootings of Renee Good and Alex Petty in Minneapolis. Officers immediately tracked and arrested Kaczmarek. Photos of the syringe that fell under Kaczmarek was tackled show what appears to be a light brown liquid inside. Authorities haven't publicly identified the substance. Kaczmarek hadn't been formally charged or scheduled for an initial court appearance as of Wednesday afternoon. Daniel Botura Pepping, a spokesman for the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, said they had still not received the results of the police investigation. A statement from the Minneapolis Police Department said the FBI was now leading the investigation. Impassable conditions. Mississippi sent 135 snowplows to help clear traffic-clogged highways. Conditions were growing more dire in parts of the South still reeling from sub-freezing temperatures and widespread power outages as vehicles got stranded for hours on major highways, and officials warned Wednesday that people stuck at home were running out of food, medicine, and other essentials. Mississippi dispatched 135 snowplows and National Guard troops equipped with wreckers to sections of Interstates 55 and 22 that were gridlocked by vehicles abandoned in the state's ice-stricken northern region. Tens of thousands of homes and businesses remained without power as daytime temperatures sunk below freezing overnight in a region unaccustomed to and ill-equipped for such weather. Cars and semi-trailers trying to navigate the frozen highways single file began getting stuck. No injuries were reported, the Mississippi Department of Public Safety said, but one driver told the Associated Press she feared she might freeze to death on I-22 when her car sat idle for more than 14 hours. There was nowhere to go, nothing to do, no one to save us, said Samantha Lewis, 78. Calls of desperation. The growing misery and anxiety comes amid what Mississippi officials said is the state's worst winter storm in more than 30 years. Roughly 332,000 homes and businesses remained without power Wednesday, the vast majority of them in Tennessee and Mississippi. At least 70 people have died across the U.S. in states afflicted by the dangerous cold. In Hardin County, Tennessee, at the Mississippi state line, many people remain trapped in homes without electricity because of roads made impassable by ice and fallen trees, said Larray Sliger, the county's emergency management director. Sliger said people who were prepared to manage a couple of days without power can't go much longer without help. They're cold, they don't have power, they don't have heat, they're out of propane, they're out of wood, they're out of kerosene for their kerosene heaters, she said. They have no food, they have no additional fuel for their alternative heating sources, so they're needing out. In Northeast Mississippi, emergency managers in Alcorn County were also receiving calls of desperation for people running out of food, water, medication, and other supplies, said Evan Gibbons, the emergency agency's director. He said dispatchers who have been sleeping at work since Friday have fielded more than 2,000 calls. We are doing everything we possibly can, said Gibbons, noting that 200 people were staying at a local arena that was being used as a warming shelter. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, January 29th, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.